Hi, this is Jalen for Dobbs, where tire buying is easy. At GoToDobbs.com, shop brands, sizes, pricing, and our amazing deals. With 40-plus locations, get same-day install. For tires, it's Dobbs.
For deals you can use, click on GoToDobbs.com now.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Time now for the Balloon Party on the Tim McKernan Podcast. Presented by Dobbs Tire and Auto Centers on 101 ESPN.
Yes, yes. Welcome in. This is Balloon Party, driven by Mungan S. St. Louis Acura, Mungan S. Burkhardt, Alton Toyota. Tim McKernan, Jackson Burkett with you for the next hour of broadcasting here on 101 and the 101 ESPN YouTube channel, Jackson. And there were 56 people just waiting for us to start up today's program, including Dan Jansen, Droid Effects, John Scores, and Tiny PP, a.k.a. Don Corleone of the YouTube chat. Wonderful to have them on board, as well as all of you at work, in your vehicles, or perhaps you are in the YouTube chat as well. Come on in. The water is warm, and text into the program, Air Comfort Service text line 314-399-9646. Jackson has prepared a smorgasbord today for you, and it's called the Little Piddles Weekend Wrap-Up.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, we got a lot. Plus, we got Jeremy Rutherford at 10:45. I want to play the Drew Bannister sound. This isn't necessarily the lead, but I just want everybody to hear this, and it's going to build the foundation for my conversation with JR coming up at 10:45. And I just want you to listen and then come away with what your first thought is after you hear Drew Bannister addressing the media on his time to date as Blues head coach, which will feature at a minimum one more game, but possibly at a maximum one more game as the Blues close out the season on Wednesday night against the Dallas Stars. Here's Drew Bannister.
Yeah, it's been a great experience. I mean, the players, the coaching staff, the management have been outstanding to me. It's been a great learning experience for me, obviously for myself, you know, as a coach to grow, be here. The players have been great to me. Like I said, the coaching staff coming in, you know, not being one of the guys coming in here and them welcoming me. And this is a hardworking group. Like, this coaching staff puts a lot of work into what they do behind the scenes, which people don't see a lot of. We spend a lot of hours here, and that group's, you know, they really dug in this year for this group and the players to make sure that we were prepared and give ourselves a chance to get in the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, we're equally disappointed, you know, like we're disappointed in how this ended for ourselves and for our players and for the organization and for the fans. But, you know, for myself, you know, certainly this has been a great experience for me, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciated the, you know, the effort that the players and the coaches gave each day.
When you hear that, what is your first reaction? 314-399-9646, Air Comfort Service text line, and of course the YouTube chat. My first reaction was, he has been told he is not going to be the head coach, and I was wondering if that is what you hear. I don't think a guy who's still in the mix for the job talks about it being a great learning experience for him. I think he's probably more in campaign mode. And so if indeed that is the case, and I don't know that to be the case, but if indeed that is the case, then the question is, who will be coaching the Blues when October rolls around and they open up the 2024-2025 season? Jackson, your read.
Yeah, it definitely sounded reflective. It sounded like a person who was very thankful and grateful for the opportunity to do what he's done now for the past couple of months. It did not seem to me like someone whose name is still in contention to be the permanent head coach. I think you would hear like stuff like, and I'm excited if I'm brought back. I'm excited for what the future can hold. You'd see or something to that extent. Instead, it was all reflection. And I think that nothing he said was wrong or came off wrong, but it definitely seemed like somebody who is not going to be coaching the team come October. Personally.
So the text inbox agrees. He thinks he's gone. That's from the 636. yeah, that Bannister soundbite sounded like a farewell. That's from the 618. So, yeah, that sounds like a man who knows he's not going to be the coach of the St. Louis Blues after his last game. That's from the 314. Okay, so we're all on the same page. I heard that, and I go, okay, he knows. And I kind of figured that that was the case. But then the direction they go with the new hire will also, I think, indicate the direction that they plan to go this off season. Because if you are going to go with one of the more established coaches, I would imagine that expedites the timeline as much as they possibly can. I know that they're at the mercy of the cap and some contracts. Anyway, Jeremy Rutherford's going to be with us at 10:45, and we will have an in-depth discussion on that. But now, ladies and gentlemen, I yield the stage to a man who goes by Piddles.
Piddles here, and I think when in doubt, the lead is the Cardinals. When in doubt, the lead is the Cardinals. They dropped two on the weekend.
Just for the purpose of letting the audience get behind the scenes of the show prep meeting, I was arguing it was the Battlehawks winning in San Antonio.
Yeah, you campaigned hard for the Battlehawks in their 31-24
defeat. Jackson went with the Cardinals, so all right, here you go.
Yeah, I pushed right past that, and you know, Kakaw fans, come after me. Don't come after Tim.
Thank you. 314-399-9646.
But we're going to leave with the Cardinals, and I'm just going to ask it point blank. What's the deal with sitting Mason Wynn twice a week? I get sitting on some weekdays or afternoon games, but when he is your most effective hitter, there has to be a conversation if Brandon Crawford can get in at some other position. Is this just a populist Cardinal dissension take, or is there merit to the complaint?
Well, I asked Randy Carricker and Brooke Grimsley what the big topic was on the opening drive, as I'm one to do when I walk in here to do Balloon Party, and they said Mason Wynn. Yeah. And Mason Wynn's sitting is what has people really fired up. And I understand that, especially considering he is one of the guys, one of the few guys, who is performing offensively above what expectations would be. And he's really performing above what expectations would be. John Denton of MLB.com had a tweet about yesterday with the explanation from Ali Marmol that they want to keep his body fresh. He needs a day. We talked about it, and his body can use it. He's swinging it well. He's playing good defense, and he's running the bases. But in conversation with him, today would be a good day for him to have off. This is going to be a long season for him, and keeping him fresh will be important. Our communication has been good, and we agreed today would be a good day to rest. I'm surprised by that explanation. I'm surprised by the reasoning. He's 22. There's other guys who are older who are playing more time than he is, and I don't really understand. I'll be honest with you. I guess this kind of speaks also to the fact that this is getting as much attention as it is to how blah the situation is in 2024, that a guy who, you know, is certainly in the early stages of his career not playing, because otherwise there really isn't a whole lot that's all that surprising. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There isn't greatness, mm-mm, nor is there like, holy crap, this team, they're just kind of, this is...
They're stuck in neutral.
They're 7-9, and they're a hybrid. They're a team that's kind of trying to hold on all while not necessarily fully transitioning. And so, the fact that he's not playing is strange given the reason that he's not playing. But, you know, it's not necessarily something that, you know, I think that is criminal. It just speaks to team isn't that great. Team doesn't really hit. Team has the fourth lowest run output in the National League, and the one guy who has been hitting so far through 16 games is only playing 4 or 5 games a week. And the reason given is we've got to save his body, and he's 22. So it's that part is the part that stands out to me. Jackson, your thoughts?
Yeah, I, to an extent, understand keeping Brandon Crawford sharp in cases where he'll be pinch hitting, or if he has to come in for injury, you got to keep him sharp. Understand that to an extent. I understand Mason Wynn has not played the 162-game schedule in his young career. Understand that. But when you are in desperate need for offense, and when you look at the final scores, the Cardinals are in desperate need for offense, taking out your most effective hitter, also very effective with runners in scoring position, and you take him out twice a week, it's really tough to explain that away. And like I said, I understand some of the reasoning behind it. I understand putting guys like Mats and Sonny Gray on pitch counts to keep them healthy. When you got a young player who's playing outstanding to start a season, keep that momentum going. Just sitting them like damn near every afternoon game and twice a week is not what the Cardinals need at this moment. And so for that reason, like I said, like, can Brandon Crawford literally play anywhere else? Can he play second? Can he play third anywhere else but shortstop? Because I think you need Wynn in there every single day.
For the record, Gorman, Arenado, Scott have all played all 16 games. Donovan's played 15. Goldschmidt's played 15. And then Mason Wynn has played 14 of 16, along with Jordan Walker, 14 of 16. I'll tell you the thing that I, this segues right into, that I am concerned about is Jordan Walker.
Me too, man.
Oh, you agree with that?
I mean, he got a triple.
This was not part of the Little Piddles weekend wrap-up. No. It's a surprise topic.
He got a triple on Saturday, but it was because he chopped one down the line at third. And also, I'll put something in predictionary right now.
Oh.
One of these days, Jordan Walker's going to get hurt with his head first slides. He has no clue how to, he like belly flops onto the ground and like kadunk kadunks into the base.
I like that. Kadunk kadunk.
I had no way of describing how he does it.
It was perfect. It was wonderful. I think people are going to start using kadunk kadunks.
He did it on that Saturday afternoon game against the Marlins when he slid into second, and then Saturday sliding into third. He's going to get hurt. Slide in feet first, Jordan. Please. We can't have more injuries.
For the record, he's hitting 178, 8 for 45 on the season with no home runs and two RBIs. I mean,
that's terrible.
That's not something that, you know, if this was his first season and he didn't have a full season under his belt, but just considering what the expectations were, the direction it was heading right into March of 2023 and where it is at mid-April 2024, it's a little strange and concerning. So your thoughts on Jordan Walker, also welcome along with your thoughts on Mason Wynn. 314-399-9646, Air Comfort Service text line. The YouTube chat is open for business as well. And Stephen Wildwood has left a mic drop.
He has.
So we'll have that for you. Jeremy Rutherford at 1045. More of the Little Piddles weekend wrap-up as we head to Augusta National next. This is Balloon Party on 101 ESPN.
We're right back to the Balloon Party on the Tim McKernan Podcast. Presented by Dobbs Tire and Auto Centers on 101 ESPN.
Welcome back to Balloon Party 101 ESPN. Timothy Michael McKernan, Jackson Bennett Burkett with you here on the program. And we are in the midst of the Little Piddles weekend wrap-up. Jackson, you said we got a mic drop?
Oh, we do, matter of fact.
We got Stephen Wildwood.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the mic drop.
I mean, just not hitting right now. It'll come around.
Stop it! Half the team is hitting under 200, and the only guy hitting over 300, you won't even put in the lineup every day. What the hell's going on, Ollie? And what's the media in this town talking about? The Masters! Why don't you two master the art of holding people accountable, get on a plane to Oakland, and get a ticket to the game? There's only like 100 people who go to that game in the whole game. I want you holding Allie accountable for all these stupid, idiotic moves. And the next thing you do when you get home is you go down to Busch Stadium, get a hold of that bow tie, and tell his ass we need players and we need them now. And the other thing, McKernan, if they ever, anybody gets married on opening day weekend again, you don't go to the damn wedding. In fact, anybody who went to that wedding is banned from opening day festivities for 10 years. You tell that person, most marriages fail anyway. You'll just go to the next wedding that they have. Tired of it!
My God.
Oh, I'm requesting a wellness check on Steve.
My sister's wedding catches a stray.
Yeah, man.
And they're celebrating their 9-day anniversary today, so that's going to ruin that.
That's going to be tough. They shouldn't listen to this segment.
Wow. Well, I mean, I've been held accountable, and he is not pleased with the work that we're doing.
10-year ban from opening day. I don't know how you're going to handle that. As
10 years.
Yeah, you are Mr. Opening Day.
So I will not be allowed for the next 10 years because I was at my sister's wedding.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
Unfortunate.
It's going to be tough.
Your thoughts are welcome. 314-399-9646. And of course, the YouTube chat is 101 ESPN. The cameras are sponsored by Air Alliance team. And 116 friends of the feather have gathered to talk it over. And I see Cat Dad Gamer say we're going to have a whole Steve segment soon. Tiny PP says, Tim, take your ban. And Jeff R. says, Steve is on one today. There you go. Steven Wildwood going crazy. Jay Apple says it's his favorite part of the show. And the fans of Steven Wildwood are active in the YouTube chat. Jackson, what do we have on this Little Piddles weekend wrap-up that will include at 10:45 Jeremy Rutherford discussing the future of the Blues head coaching position?
Yeah, can't wait to talk to JR, but serendipitous on the heels of that mic drop, talking about us mastering the art of holding someone accountable, that we're going to head down to Augusta and talk about the festivities that took place over the weekend. Scottie Scheffler continues his dominance on pro golf yesterday with his second green jacket in 3 years. Put yourself in the role of leadership with golf and other sports. Do you think leagues and commissioners prefer dominance and dynasties over parity year to year? Is golf different in that sense from other leagues? And which do you prefer to see?
Wow. Nice. You macroed it really nicely.
Thank you.
Well, first off, and I will answer your questions, but first off, tip of the cap to a St. Louisan who won the Millionaire Maker, the $2,000 entry, on DraftKings with his lineup. And it's a friend of one of our producers on TMA, KG in O-Town. Mm-hmm. And he sat with him as he watched the guy win $1 million yesterday.
It's crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he was texting me. KG was texting me during it. And he was telling me, like, what needed to happen. And I was watching under that, in that sense. And I could feel the sweat. And I had nothing on the line. I couldn't imagine the possibility of winning seven figures.
So he had Scheffler, Ludvig, so the top two, Tommy Fleetfleet, who finished T3. With Homa and Morikawa, and then you had some of the lower cost guys, Adam Shank, and then two other players. I don't know if you recall.
Bryson was one of them.
Oh, yeah, Bryson as well, along with, boy, how do you afford all that? Because Tommy Fleetfleet wasn't that. Anyway, guy won $1 million.
Yeah.
So God bless. I like individually when there is a dominating presence in sport. I prefer it. And I don't know how to explain that. So while I was present and heartbroken in New Orleans in February of 2002, when the Patriots began their dynasty and ended what we thought was going to be the start of the Rams dynasty, I felt like it legitimized the large stage of the Super Bowl when the Patriots were in it. I liked the Yankees being what they were from 96 to whenever year you would say it ended, I guess 2009. And I wanted the Cardinals to play them so badly in a World Series. I still want that. It hasn't happened since 64, so it hasn't happened in my lifetime. I'd like to see it. You know, the Blues going up against the Red Wings when you had that core, it made it feel bigger. Even if they weren't necessarily still the best team, but the 2002 Red Wings, one of the best teams I've seen. Obviously, the Bulls run in the 90s, and whoever you would take, I mean, the Lakers had their run in the early 2000s. And then the Spurs, I didn't feel like the Spurs necessarily had the cachet of other dynasties, but certainly the numbers would back up that they did, and then the Warriors. I don't know if I'm leaving anybody out here from recent dynasties. And then when you talk about individual, you would talk about, of course, Tiger Woods, if you don't want to, you know, go into take your pick of like a Sampras-like run in tennis, or Djokic, or Federer. So with all of that said, I like this. I think he's an incredibly likable guy. The thing about him, though, versus Tiger is he's so understated in that you don't have a sense that he's as dominant as he is, because he doesn't carry himself with the flair that Tiger or other players do. Like Brooks Koepka is a major championship killer and has a real swagger about him. There's a personality trait that people either really like with him or really don't like with him. Scheffler, it's like, man, some people probably would call him boring.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he is a killer. And when I was on the air last week saying, I hope he doesn't run away with it, it wasn't like, I have a feeling. It's all about the data. And golf, I think, is the most data-driven predictive sport because Scotty Scheffler is doing from 75 yards to 125 yards away in his proximity to the hole with his approach is historic. He's 13 feet from the hole on average. The tour average is 19 feet. I mean, he's a full 33% better than the tour average. And on top of it, he can chip, and it's not like he hits it a short way. He's dominant.
Yeah.
He just doesn't necessarily have the cachet. But now that he's won two Masters, he's a 5-foot putt away from winning four straight events. He has beaten 446 golfers in the last four events he's played and was one 5-foot putt away from beating 447. Everybody he's faced. I think that gets people's attention. And even if he is a dynamic personality or not, people start paying attention because there is a dominant force. The difference is that unlike the Yankees, who are hated because of payroll or they're just the Yankees, Duke hated because, oh, they're wealthy prep school kids, Alabama, oh, Alabama fan, I hate Saban, whatever it is. And then if you want to go to take your pick
Patriots.
Of the Patriots and the Spygate and
controversy and left
Belichick.
Right.
Yeah. So is that I don't really know what you can find on Scotty Scheffler that you're not going to like.
Just the fact that he isn't like the most dynamic personality is his only like that's the detractor is that he's just not.
But then his speech yesterday on the green when he receives the green jacket is thanking the volunteers, thanking the staff in the clubhouse, thanking the people in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting emotional talking about his parents, his caddy. Who he had make the walk with him, Ted Scott, who caddied for Bubba Watson in two Masters championships. I don't know what you can't like about him.
Right.
You know, and by the way, I wanted somebody to emerge, even though I had him on rosters, to make it a thrilling back nine. We really haven't had a thrilling back nine at Augusta, maybe since Tigers in 2019. Yeah. I didn't realize Hideki Matsuyama only won by one against Zalatoris until you called that up today.
Yeah.
But Scheffler won comfortably to the point that he could like... on 18 back in 22, and Rahm won comfortably last year. And again, Scheffler wins comfortably this year. So I like the dominance, and I cannot wait. I have more anticipation for the PGA in May than I would have had he not won. And honestly, I am probably one of only like 10 people who are currently hearing my voice right now who was paying attention to the Texas Children's Open a few weeks ago. But I wanted him to win that because I wanted him to be on a winning streak going into Augusta where he was only a 4-1. I mean, 4-1 to win a tournament is unheard of in golf when you're talking about so many people participating.
Yeah.
He's plus 375. Is that what it is right now?
I saw some places have him up to plus 450.
Okay, so either way, it's the same kind of thing at Valhalla for the PGA Championship. Personally, I like it. I like and respect him. And it's just, it's understated dominance. That's what he is doing out there. And I have a great appreciation for it as a golf nerd because I'm just in awe of his ability to approach and then also to get up and down. And I think the reason why other players might be hitting to quadrants on greens there and he could be more comfortable making what would be considered aggressive plays, like he went for 13 and two, even though he's got a comfortable lead, because he knows he can do it. And then even if he didn't do it, he knows he can get up and down better than anybody. It's like if you do play the game and the thing that most, you know, players who are getting comfortable playing, what do they do with their putts? They leave them short. Why? Because, oh God, I don't want to see it go past. Once you start being comfortable putting, that's when you go, okay, I run it past because if I miss by 3 feet, I know I'm going to make the 3-footer. And you might not make it 100% of the time, but if you make it 90% of the time, it's still a win by going for the hole as opposed to just kind of
tapping it. Yeah.
I was going to say bitching it up there.
Yeah. Well,
to be more politically correct.
Right, right.
Well, that's what he's able to do, and that's what separates him from everybody else. It's just he doesn't wear red on Sundays and isn't fist pumping, and so it isn't necessarily held with the same kind of, and not to say he's Tiger Woods, I want to make that clear, but the dominance that he is displaying and has over the last couple of years is the first time we've seen anybody do it since Tiger Woods. We've had a whole bunch of, he might be the next Tiger Woods, he might be the next Tiger Woods. None of them were. He could be. Scotty Scheffler with his second major championship in only, he's 27 years old.
Fifth major start
Fifth Masters.
Fifth Master, I meant to say.
The man is on an absolute tear. So Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters yesterday. Ludvig Åberg, keep an eye on that guy. That was his first major.
Yeah.
He is sick. Mm-hmm. And was walking around with a smile on his face the whole time. Keep an eye on that. Those guys are also smiling assassins. Max Homa, who's a great, great guy, and I'm pulling for him to win. A wonderful finish there. And Colin Morikawa, had he won yesterday, he would have been a win away from the career Grand Slam, and that would have struck me as kind of flying under the radar relative to that accomplishment. So Valhalla is the next stop for a major. Hilton Head the next stop this week. Scotty's currently listed as playing.
Oh, yeah, it's a signature event.
I know, but I mean, his wife is due, so I'm curious if that'll actually happen. If he will go to Dallas, I'm sure he's already in Dallas, and then fly back to South Carolina, I guess, tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, holy crap. And then I would imagine you will see him take some time off.
Yeah, I think she's doing 2 weeks. So it'll actually kind of fall in between Masters and the PGA Championship, which is probably ideal for the Scheffler family.
But I will always watch that because I just played that course less than 2 weeks ago. And it's not a course where you can just bang driver, but I mean, that suits a guy who's a wizard with his irons and his approaches and short game. So can't wait to watch it again this weekend with the RBC Heritage Signature event at Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. All right, Jeremy Rutherford is going to join us coming up at 10:45. More of the Little Pills Weekend wrap up. This is Balloon Party on 101 ESPN.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're right back to the Balloon Party on the Tim McKernan Podcast. Presented by Dobbs Tire and Auto Centers on 101 ESPN.
Welcome back. This is Balloon Party 101 ESPN. Jeremy Rutherford with us at 10:45-ish. And I can't wait to talk about the Blues coaching situation with him, because it certainly sounds like Drew Bannister knows his last game is this Wednesday in Dallas. Jackson, you've got this Little Pills weekend wrap-up. We've talked Cardinals, Mason Wynn. We've talked Cardinals, Jordan Walker. We've talked Masters. We've talked Blues. What do you have up your sleeve next? I mean, City wins 1-0. Battle Hawks win in San Antonio. Thought it was the lead. Didn't get my vote across. What's next on the Little Piddles weekend wrap-up?
Well, I'm a tad concerned sitting over here, Tim, because as you mentioned,
teams... Is that the used Band-Aid that you have sitting next to you?
There is a used Band-Aid to my left here, and I'm not saying I will vomit, but if I do, you know the reason.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow.
I'm not gonna, I don't know who's...
Sounds like you're blaming Rocchio.
No, I don't know whose Band-Aid it is.
Well, I do... mean, who ran the board before?
Rocchio did.
No further questions.
But that doesn't... You know, maybe... I just know it's a Band-Aid, and it has been on someone's person, and now it is sitting on this console, and it's staring at me like the Green Goblin. I'm Willem Dafoe. That's the Green Goblin mask, wow. And I'm going to vomit.
Wow, wow, wow.
Regardless, I don't have a question about the Battle Hawks, nor do I have a question about City, and that's not a slight at either franchise.
Unbelievable.
I was unaware until yesterday afternoon that the Battlehawks played the San Antonio Brahmas. I was aware that City was playing and they won 1-0 over Austin. Joe Klaus with a nice little goal.
This was the first goal of the year.
Yeah, great to see the Brazilian, but...
Oh, you were watching instead of the Masters?
No. But I was, you know, I keep up to tabs with the local soccer team. Now, as I am going to be frank with the folks, I don't...
Honesty in media.
I don't really watch most of the Battlehawks games. And okay. By much, I mean I haven't watched a second. But that is not necessarily a slight on the franchise. And maybe it is. No, just kidding. I love the Battlehawks. I love all the local teams.
Yeah. I mean, what a pivot right there.
I watch every single one of them religiously, regardless of what golf tournaments are or not going on, or NBA playoff basketball.
Thank you.
I don't care about those two things. I care about the local team.
So our question is what the Knicks... clinching the 2 seed in the East. Is that what we're doing here?
I'm curious what they're going to look like without Julius Randle in the playoffs, but all of that aside.
Okay. Is there another question, or did I catch you unawares?
Kind of been vamping, hoping I could fall ass backwards into a question about it.
I noticed that. Well,
Oh my God,
I'm going into the Air Comfort Service text line because I know they're not going to be happy.
Well, I think the obvious question...
The first is just the name of Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus Christ is what just was sent in. Just kind of an observation. We're a couple weeks removed from Easter. Then this one's not as religious oriented. From the 618, you effing, and then it's a five-letter word for cat or kitten, so he's not happy.
That not watching the battle? Okay.
And then are the Battle Hawks local? They are based in Texas, and I just don't feel connected. Oh, there you go. You got some support. That's the now you need to be. Now you can become guy who discovered his take mid-show.
Yeah. How come this team isn't based now? I mean, I think the real question when it comes to anything UFL or Battlehawks is when they play in front of 11,000 San Antonio.
This you're hijacking my take.
Yeah, whatever.
this is my TMA take. This guy is a dirty, rotten scoundrel.
Listen, takes are like they're community takes.
Well, I'll tell you, that's a shot at Twitter.
And I'm dipping. Yeah, oh, yeah. Mason Wynn. I'm dipping into the take pool here, and I'm pulling one out. I'm waving it off, drying it out.
So I'll go ahead and give my take since I'm the one who came up with it.
But I do
wonder this, and since we have JR coming up in a matter of moments, today is not the day to do it. But I do wonder, and I know a lot of people in this audience are fans of the Battle Hawks, why St. Louis gets 40,000 plus. If St. Louis gets 40,000 plus for an 11:30 kickoff this coming Saturday against Memphis, I mean, with weather, I mean, it's not going to be as nice as it was this weekend, but it's still supposed to be decent. It's going to be in the 60s. What in the hell? What is going on? And this isn't me saying, what are you people doing? I'm going, why? Because I think we're doing this to shove it up Stan Kroenke's backside and the NFL's backside. I think that might be still a little of it. But why is it so successful here? And why is it such a, you know, would they have 12,000, I think, in San Antonio, 11,000, 12,000 yesterday? You know, we saw the Battlehawks play at Ford Field to open up the season. They didn't have many people there. What is it? And I'd really like to dive deeply into a conversation on that perhaps some point this week, what that's about. But I'm sure people who are listening can give their reasons. I mean, it's more like a party atmosphere, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think people are like emotionally attached. I think it's just you can tailgate and have a good time with it. But I mean, you could do that in San Antonio and Memphis and Detroit. And they're not getting crowds like they're getting in St. Louis. All right. JR is going to join us on the other side of the break. Tim McKernan, Jackson Burkett with you. It's Balloon Party 101 ESPN.
We're right back to the Balloon Party on the Tim McKernan Podcast. Presented by Dobbs Tire and Auto Centers on 101 ESPN. News, notes, and nuggets. It's time for the Rutherford Report with our Blues insider, Jeremy Rutherford. Brought to you by Scott Lee Heating Company, a proud Mitsubishi Electric Elite contractor.
Welcome back to McKernan, Jackson Burkett with you. And unfortunately, Jackson is really taking a lot of shrapnel in the Air Comfort Service text line. Jackson, would you like to issue a statement at all before we go to Jeremy Rutherford?
I'd like to apologize.
Oh my gosh.
To absolutely nobody.
Wow. JR, we're just going to go right to you. I apologize that you had to hear that.
Yeah, I was telling Jackson during the break, what a tight ship he runs. I get a text from him earlier this morning that said, hey, we still good for 10:45. And then I hear you, Tim, say on TMI, hey, we've told Jeremy he's coming on at 10:45. We've got him for later. So thanks for reminding Jack.
Yeah, it's impressive. The show prep that goes on TMA and Balloon Party, I would say it's second to none.
These things don't just happen.
Thank you. Thank you for saying it. JR, that means you probably heard us play the Drew Bannister sound that I asked for the audience's reaction to, and everybody has had the same reaction. That's a guy who knows he's not going to be named full-time head coach. Is that your reaction as well, or perhaps your knowledge?
Yeah, and even aside from that, and I'll get to that in a second, I just get the impression that he won't be back as the head coach, and that's not anything that at this moment is concrete. It's just don't get that sense right now. And then the past couple days, listening to Drew Bannister, as you mentioned, with the soundbite, you know, seems sort of resigned to that fact. It seemed like his comments were spoken in a reflection manner, saying that he thinks that the team has been really loyal to him, the organization has, and he really thanks them for this opportunity. He did say at one point, hope to be able to continue to work on this, but most of the comments I felt we're in a reflection manner.
So if we are going to operate on the premise that it's better than likely, at the very least, that he is not the next full-time Blues head coach, that then gets us into the conversation about who now is the time. There's one game left, and then that will be the focal point of the conversation for the St. Louis Blues. What is your opinion, sir?
Well, I think there's a lot of candidates out there, and there's a lot of candidates that you look at and have a ton of experience, and Joel Quenneville's name is going to rise to the top of that list. Of course, Joel Quenneville speaking recently on the Cam and Strick podcast, kind of saying at least what he would say, would go on to say about the situation in Chicago. You know, I think everybody can see clearly that that is him making himself, working his way back into the league. I think that at some point there's going to be a conversation with Gary Bettman about reinstatement or the ability to coach, however you want to phrase it. We did check on that a couple days ago with the league, and the league said as of now, nothing. So I think at some point that's going to come. Do the Blues have interest? I know that they've had interest in the past in Joel Quenneville, so I don't see why any of that would have changed, because the interest I'm aware of that they had in him was after everything came out in Chicago. So we'll see what happens there. But then also you have a lot of younger candidates. You have the Denver University coach who just won another championship in the NCAA. A lot of veterans out there, Gerard Gallant. You know, what's going to happen with Jim Montgomery if they lose in that first round?
Right.
I know you touched on that. Yeah, just a lot of people out there who could be available, Tim. The question I would have is, how long are they going to wait to get a guy like Quenneville, who it could take weeks, months to find out his situation with the league, and then also the situation in Boston,
right,
with Jim Montgomery? Do you wait until after that playoff appearance?
It looks like the Bruins are going to win the Atlantic. I mean, just from a math standpoint, they have two games left and they have a point lead on Florida, which would mean they would avoid a first-round matchup with the Leafs, who are sitting at 102 points. And it's just an absolute logjam for that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. They could be playing one of four teams. So with that all said, looking at the landscape, do you think there's somebody that Doug Armstrong has had his eye on throughout the course of this season and or known even when Bannister was named the interim coach? Or do you think that this was, let's see who's available when April rolls around conversation?
To my knowledge, no. And could he come out Thursday when he speaks to the media after the season finale in Dallas on Wednesday and they identify, you know, who they're going to move forward with? To my knowledge, that is not the situation, but it could be. I think that Doug realizes the landscape of coaching and guys become available after the season, in the off season. You know, unless you've got a guy that you're really particular about, I can't imagine them go in that direction prior to finding out which one of these other guys will be available. And Tim, the point that I've made a couple times recently to see if you agree with this is, you know, Doug Armstrong, and this is not to say that he's on any shaky ground with ownership, because that's not the case. Tom Stillman has complete faith in Doug Armstrong, but let's be realistic. How long is he going to be around? Even if they're successful, this could be his last coaching hire, and he's got to get it right. He has said himself, he wants to leave this organization in a better spot than when he took it over. He's certainly done that with the Stanley Cup, but he's got to get this last coaching hire, what could be his last coaching hire, right. And I think they're going to put all the time and effort and wait to see who's available before they do that.
With regard to the coaching hire, you've talked about this a couple of times on Balloon Party and TMA, and I would imagine you've talked about it and written about it on 101 ESPN and on The Athletic. If you are, take your pick of one of those more glamorous names that you cited that could be on the short list of candidates, do you look at the Blues situation and the fact that they may be a couple of years away from really, really being contenders? Does that give you pause? Does it make the job less desirable? Or, on the other hand, if the Blues were to get one of those names that you cited, who certainly have cachet, does that then expedite the quote-unquote retooling for as much as they can expedite it, considering the cap and the contracts and the age of some of the players in the system?
Yeah, so the first question first, I've asked a number of people, hey, does a 60, 65-year-old retread coach or a guy that's been around and wants to win now and can probably get a job where he can win now, what does this job look like here in St. Louis? to that guy. And I've been told there's one of 32 jobs in the league. They'll take him. They're not looking for necessarily a situation that's going to be absolutely perfect, because probably they're not going to be perfect. So I think that this job will be attractive to anybody out there, even if they're in a win now mode. And to answer your second question, does that speed it up if you bring in a Joel Quenneville, a Gerard Gallant, one of those guys who's been around? You know, I think it could potentially, but it's all going to depend on what Doug Armstrong can do with the roster, because we all know the prospects are going to be here in a couple of years, maybe making an impact in 3 to 4 years. But it's all about this current roster, how Doug Armstrong can reshape it. I think that's going to have more of an impact on how quickly the Blues can win, not just a coach coming in here.
Final question for you, just for time's sake. Jordan Kyrou has had a really good couple of months here, certainly a focal point, a lot of negativity surrounding mid-December when Craig Berube was let go and what transpired with him and the fans. What are your thoughts on where Kyrou's status will be heading into the offseason?
Here's the way I look at it. I think that he has played a lot better here lately. But to me, if I'm Jordan Kyrou, and I hear both Robert Thomas, my good buddy on the team, and Drew Bannister, you know, I'm not sure what Kyrou thinks about Bannister's thoughts, but you've had two people in the last week say, you know, I think he's played really competitively these last 10 games. And to me, that would resonate with me. Why do people have to put a number on it? Well, because that's the time frame that you've really turned it up and played well. And I would do everything this offseason to put myself in a position where when people are talking about me playing competitive, they don't have to put a game number on it. The last 3 games, last 6 games, last 10 games. So, you know, I think it's a good sign for him and for the Blues. We'll see what happens as he gets into the offseason. You know, obviously the trade talk is always going to be there when you think about Jordan Kyrou and then that no trade clause kicking in 2025. But I think, you know, they still see the upside. He's still got 31 goals and finishing strong. So I think there's always going to be belief from the organization in Jordan Kyrou.
There it is. Jeremy Rutherford with us every Monday here on Balloon Party on 101 ESPN throughout the course of the week. And, of course, writing for The Athletic. Blues and Stars, the season finale, pregame 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday here on 101 ESPN. JR, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, guys.
Talk there he is. That's Jeremy Rutherford with us here, and it's time for BK and Ferrario, as Jackson will be responding individually to all of the texts who are critical of his local sports knowledge. So if you did text that in, you'll be in a chat with Jackson here in a matter of, what, 5-10 minutes? Is that when you're going to start responding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's coming up as well. Ladies and gentlemen, time for us to shut it down. BK and Ferrario are next. For Jackson Bennett-Burkett, I'm Tim McKernan. This has been Balloon Party, driven by Munganess, St. Louis Acura, and Munganess Burkhardt Alton Toyota on 101 ESPN and the 101 ESPN and YouTube channel.
You've been listening to The Balloon Party on the Tim McKernan Podcast, presented by Dobbs Tire and Auto Centers on 101 ESPN.